previous year, we've been discussing some of the details of the Din D'Rabbanan Kol Ksamim. Just to recap for a moment, in the Torah, the woman finds a stain, it's not in the context of a hargosha, whatever that means. It means a specific physical hargosha, it means a lot of blood, it means a normal flow. Whatever your definition of hargosha is, the bottom line is sometimes it's going to be lacking, and if it's lacking, but at worst, only dealing with the Tumah Midrabban. Since we're only dealing with the Rabbanan, then we have certain kulas. We spoke a lot about the Shiur, just how big the Kesem has to be in order to build the problem. Now we move on to the next important kula as to where the Kesem is found. So that's going to make all the difference in the world as to the location of the Kesem. So we begin with it's on page 4 of the packets of the sheets. It's the 6th of the Marmar Kavos on page 4. The Mishnah tells us, Masech has Nida, not the Kesem of Eis, Yishila Chaluka Lenachris Olenida. What if a woman has a garment, she has an article of clothing, and she's wearing it part of the time, and then somebody else is wearing it part of the time, and now we find the kesem, and we're trying to figure out, well, whose kesem, which person is this kesem, is this stain coming from? So if the person whom she's lending the garment to is somebody who it doesn't really matter whether we declare that the stain belongs to the other person. Again, there's no mitzvah, minat Torah. There's no real suffering derisive because minat Torah, there's no argasha. So worse if the Rabbanan. So if the other person who she's lending the garment to, it doesn't make a difference. We can almost, throw the kesem at them, say it's their fault, it's their kesem, and I'm okay. So then she's allowed to do that. So how could she do that if the person who she's lending it to is not Jewish? So we can very easily say, oh, it must be the goyas, kesem, and if community, it doesn't make a difference in the world. Or Anita, or what if the other person who she lent the garment to happens to be Anita anyway? So it also doesn't make a difference. She's a surrender, or it's a big deal. I raise a taller bar. So then she has a right, the Jewish, the Torah woman, has a right to say, well, the kesem probably came from the other person. Now again, obviously, if this would be a dimmit of Torah, we wouldn't take this so, lightly. There's only a dimmit of Rabbanah. When you have a dimmit of Rabbanah, it's what we call Taliyah. Taliyah means that we can attribute it to something else. So here we can attribute it to the other woman, whether she's not Jewish, she's a Eid, etc. But what if you have Gimel Nashim Shalosh Shechalak Echad? What if you have three women at different times all wore this one garment, and now an hour later we find the kesem on it? So who's going to attribute the stain to who? So Rachel's going to say it's Sarah. Sarah's going to turn around and say someone. It's Rivka. It's Rachel. You can't declare one of them to be Tamei. So what do you do? Or they all three sat on one bench, and now we find blood sit in that area. So now we're in a pickle, because to apply the principle of Taliyah that will push off the one and say, oh, it's probably the other ones, so each one can say that about the other one. So to say that they're all Tahoras, that's what we call a character disassery, that's mutually exclusive. And now we come up, Nebuch, the Kulam Tumeis, we have to ask all them, we have to declare to all Asuros, because for one to be told on the other, it doesn't make any sense. To declare they're all Tahoros for sure doesn't make any sense. So we have no choice. We have to declare they're all Tumeis.
Even those
Midrabanan. Right, the whole thing is Midrabanan. Midrat Torah, none of this matters. Midrat Torah, there's no Gosh anyway. So this was not the part that we, it's interesting, did, but that, this is all the introduction to the part that we need now. Yashvu al Saf Shal Shal Evet. What if the bench that they sit on is a stone bench? Ola Itzvah Shal Merchat. Or the women were sitting on a slab concrete, is a slab of something that's connected to the ground, to the base of Merchatz, to the bathhouse. So what's the common denominator between these two? They're not makabel tumah. The kli avonim, something that's made out of stone, is not makabel tumah. Or something that's connected to the ground is not makabel tumah. So all of a sudden, Rabbi Nechemi retired. Rabbi Nechemi says that any kesem, any stain that's found on a dover she'ein makabel tumah, itself is permissible. It doesn't affect the woman's status. Shahir Rabbi Nechemi Omer. Rabbi Nechemi used to say, as a general rule, called davar she'en makabel tumah, ein makabel ksamim. It's also not like a secret, like Sisrei Torah. You don't do anything. You need a little bit of time to figure out. But that's the principle that Rabbi Nechemi said, that davar she'en makabel tumah, ein makabel ksamim. Where in the world did this come from? How did Rabbi Nechemi know this? So in the 7th of the Marmar Kavos, the din of Rabbi Nechemi itself is so hard to understand. The source for Rabbi Nechemi is perhaps even more difficult. The Gemara says in the 7th of the Marmar Kavos, they needed our Sabbath of Eis, with Masna, my time of the Rabbi Nechemi. What is Rabbi Nechemi's reason? To see the Niksa la Oretz Teshev, Kev and Shesh la Oretz Niksa, so possibly the Shadyal, which obviously the Pshuta Shemit was not talking anything about that was Nidu or Ksamim. And some of the Pasuk alludes to the fact that when you go to the ground, you become Naki, you become clean, i.e., anytime you're sitting on the ground, which itself is not a Kabbal Tumah, somehow all Ksamim doesn't apply. Again, very, very hard to understand. This is obviously all a Din Midrabanan. But we have to understand two things about Rabbi Nechemiah, three things about Rabbi Nechemiah. First of all, we have to raise the question, we postulate Rabbi Nechemiah. So if we don't postulate Rabbi Nechemiah, then there's going to be very little for us to discuss the halacha. So number one, we have to see, do we follow Rabbi Nechemiah? Then number two, we have to figure out what are the parameters of Rabbi Nechemiah within the Gemara. What are some of the examples that fall under Rabbi Nechemiah's criteria in the Gemara? We need four things to do. Then we also have to figure out what are the criteria of Bizman Hazeh? What are some of those things Bizman Hazeh that could potentially be covered by Rabbi Nechemiah? Rabbi Nechemiah's statement, if it's true lahalacha, it could potentially be a lifesaver in many, many areas of Chasnida. It could impact on ksubim found on toilet paper, tissue paper, perhaps. It could impact on ksubim found on toilet bowls. 50% of the ksubim may potentially be knocked out by Rabbi Nechemiah's rules, assuming that we understand it properly. So we have to understand, do we follow Rabbi Nechemiah? What are some of the examples that Chazal give Rabbi Nechemiah? What are some of the practical examples today of Rabbi Nechemiah? And then the most lumpish part of the question is, why in the world should this be true? Like, what in the world is Rabbi Nechemiah based on? Why should there be any correlation between whether the item is mekabel tumah and whether the woman is declared to be tameya? So we're passing the shayla, whether she could be with the husband, so mach patli, whether the bench, whether the chair that she's sitting on is mekabel tumah. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of understanding the sugya.
I'm still not sure I understand why three women b'cheskas tara, and you find a something tummy in their vicinity.
It's not their vicinity. It's let's say there would only been one woman. If one woman would have sat on a regular bench, that's mekabel tumah, and she would have gotten up and found a stain there, we would have declared her to be tameh.
Right.
So now that there are three women, why is it making things better? Because Rachel's going to say, oh, it's not from me, it's from Rivka. So Rivka's going to say, what do you mean? It's not from me, it's from you. And they're going to say, no, it's Sarah. So I was going to say, it's not mine. So we can't pinpoint the quote unquote the blame on anybody. When one of the women who sat there was non-Jewish or in need of us, and then we're going to lose by declaring that it's theirs. But for us to honestly say that it belongs to one woman over the other, you can't really do that. To declare it to all Tahoros, that's mutually exclusive. And that's one of the rules of Nechus Taliyah, when you can't declare one over the other, so you have no choice, you have to be machmer and all of them.
Why don't we say it's suffik derabbanan and then go?
So you're one of them, so we really ask you is why are we all suffik derabbanan lekula? So we got work to do. That's the big rule of Maramach number 10.
Is that the Ran Svar of Adal?
It's almost like Dal Kos, right. As I was saying, I realized it's almost like the Ran, the famous Ran Svarim, where the Gemara says that there was machlokes, which of the four kosos you have to lean for it to say that. Everybody agrees you have to lean, and everyone agrees you don't have to lean at all four. So one opinion said you have to lean the first two, and one said you have to lean the last two. So the Gemara says, since we don't know which is which, we have to lean all four. So the Ran asks, but he has to lean all four. Why don't you just say suffix, the Ban Lekulah in effect? Just lean nothing, lean the first two, whatever. So the Ran says, no, what are you going to do? You're going to lean the first two? Why does that make any sense? You have no idea. Chazal just told you it's a take. We don't know who's right, the first or the last two. So if you arbitrarily pick the first two, makes no sense. If you arbitrarily pick the last two, makes no sense. For you to take the approach, well, I'll be making on the first two because it's a suffix, and then I'll be making on the last two because it's a suffix, that's a contradiction. You have, everyone agrees. Whereas everyone holds you have to leave at some point. So there are four logical choices here. Like regions. None of the above. Four logical choices. Either lean the first two, lean the last two, lean none, or lean all. So says the Ran, you can't pick the first two, you can't pick the last two, you can't do nothing, so you have to do something, so the only thing that's left is to do all four. So the same thing here. We can't declare Saras to Meah, we can't declare Saras to Hora, we can't declare Rufus to Hora, we can't declare the both to Horos. No choice, you have to declare the both to
Meah. There's no reason for Mechalik between the fact that the second case, it's on a bench, something external. The bed is external too, but the fact that meaning a bench, couldn't you find more svaras, more reasons to be told? Because I don't know, like we were talking before about like bugs and stuff. That on a bench, you would have an external reason.
Okay, right. So maybe it came with someone totally different. I mean, forget right. The two women.
As opposed to a baguette.
Very good. Excellent. That's a very good point. So the truth is that if the bench would have been dirty before, we wouldn't have known the bench was clean before, then we probably could have said, oh yeah, it probably came from an animal, from who knows what from before. But whenever we're dealing with some, we're talking about something that's the cheskes, that's clean. So a woman puts on pair of underwear. So we assume it just came out of the laundry, everything is clean, to prove it otherwise, that she finds a kesef. So you can't say, oh, it was probably on from before. But if a person is exposed to something that was itself dirty beforehand, then sometimes we can align some from beforehand. Right. So the Gemara continues on the 7th of the Mamakobos. Now that we just quoted the quote with the Pasuk, the Mok, whatever that means, the source for Rabbi Nechemiah. So So comes to the mind, gives you some details of Rabbi Chanan. Back in the seventh of the Rambam, comes to the end of the first line.
And it's just, I don't want to miss the whole shit. Is Rabbi Nachman's thing, he could say it in one line. What was his...
Anything that's not subject to impurity, anything that itself can't become impure, yeah. If a woman finds a stain on it, she doesn't have to worry about it. The stain is permissible. Okay? So Amravu, the end of the seventh line. I'm sorry, the end of the first line of the seventh Rambam. Amravu nam Rabbi Chanan. Mitayer hoy Rabbi Nachman. Afilu be'achorek licheres. Rabbi Nechemia would declare that a kesef that's found on the outside of an earthenware vessel would also be okay. So a woman was sitting somewhere, she was sitting next to a bowl or something, and she gets up and she realizes there's a kesef, there's a stain of blood on the outer part. Why is that? What's special about the outer part? Klicheres is makabel tuma. Well, this is tricky. Klicheres is only subject to tuma on the inside, not on the outside. So she special pasul chumash. Klicheres, unlike other vessels, an earthenware vessel is only susceptible to impurity if it's touched on something on the inside. So it was this pshita. That's obvious. Mal b'tem, I would have thought ligza gabo atu tocho kamash b'blah. I would have thought if you find a stain on something that's, for argument's sake, made out of stone, it's not makabel tuma at all. Or you find the kesem on the ground, it's not makabel tuma altogether. So then I understand. Chavi sticks to his view. It's not susceptible to tuma, and therefore everything is okay. But a kli cheres, half the kli is subject to tuma. So she'll find the same kesem, find the same stain on the inside, it'll be a problem. The outside, it won't be a problem. That gets a little bit tricky for people. So I would have thought maybe we should have made a gezeirah midrabanan, we should have extended ksamim midrabanan and said, well, it's on a kli cheres, it's on earthenware, it's a problem. Kamash blood, it's not. I think there's another example. Amar Baye. Rabbi Nechemia would permit a kesem that was found on like a rag. It's a very, very small rag. It's less than three etzbos, less than three fingers by three fingers, so nobody would use it. Not a rich person, not a poor person. It's a garbage. It's a shvat that's not even usable. So Rabbi Nechemia would permit a kesem found on that as well.
Why isn't the Gemara asked?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. So, at the end of the day, these are the only two examples that the Gemara gave. The Mishnah gave one or two others, the Sasa Shal Eben, the Itzvah Shal Verchas, etc. So we have, again, a few examples. Probably none of these four examples have any relevance to us. Most women are not sitting on the Sasa Shal Evens, or the Itzvah Shal Merchatzes, or the Achorek Cheres, or the Bethlenios. So these examples, per se, are not going to really speak to us. But the underlying principle is obvious, that as long as it's not makabel tuma, it would be okay. How would we know today what is makabel tuma? It's not makabel tuma. So the Shach has a line, the beginning of Siman Kuf Tzadi, the beginning of the Chassam, where this halacha is quoted. I gave it away by saying that we already followed Rabbi Chemia. So the Shach says, in case you're interested in figuring out what's makabel tuma, what's not, so ayin maseches kelim. He writes, take a look at maseches kelim. Now, maseches kelim is 30 prakim of probably the most difficult, intricate, detailed metzias of Mishnayas, and the Shach just knocked it off. You have a few minutes on the side between, waiting for Chazas HaShatz, go learn the Maseches Kelim. So we're not going to learn all Maseches Kelim now, but we'll try to highlight the things that are relevant for us. But first of all, how do we paskin? So Dar Shem Chia Bar Amas, Mishad Rav, Halachik Rebbe Nechemia. So Rav Chia Bar Amas, the Master says that Rav, we follow Rebbe Nechemia. So even though in the Mishnayas, Rebbe Nechemia is always presented as a Das Yochid, they decide that Halacha follows Rabbi Nechemia, and that is it. That's Gemara Paskin is the favorite, and nothing to discuss anymore. We Paskin Shulchan Aruch that any cast and any stain that's found on a Dovash and a Mekabel Tuma is Mutal Lechatchila. It's not a problem. Minat Torah was never a problem, even with the Rabban, it's not a problem, as long as the item that the cast is found on is a Dovash and a Mekabel Tuma. But again, we still don't really understand what the reason for Rabbi Nechemia had to go for the pasuk, but it's hard to understand what that pasuk in Shayom is more of a problem, more than a smachta than an actual source, so to speak. So what exactly is Rabbi Nechemia based on? So before we can understand what Rabbi Nechemia is based on, we have to take one more look, one more Gemara, and one Gemara and one Tosfos before we get to get a deeper understanding of what this din of Ein Makabel Ksamim is all about. And once we get there, so then we'll be able to understand hopefully how to extrapolate this matter there. So the eighth of the Maimonides, we went to us the following story: Nidin and Chesed and Aleph. Hay Yisus Adishtalach Vadamav Mashtisa. There was a woman who was working at a most of Mishnah, something like a loom. I mean, she's in the olden days, still there. Who knows what the looms are? I don't know what a loom is, but whatever. When you the warp and the woof and all those malachas in Masechta Shabbos that nobody knows. It all says in the English books, malachas part of the weaving process. Do you remember, Moshe, do you remember that time that fellow from, maybe before your time, it was a Dayan from England who wrote that Sefer Maisa Oireg. Were you around the sheep when he came?
I don't remember.
He came. There was a Dayan in England who wrote a Sefer for Maisa Oireg. He wrote all the intricacies of Hilchos Shabbos and all those malachas that most of us have no idea what they're talking about. So he actually came to YU many years ago, and he brought a loom with him, and he made a whole demonstration. And he's sitting up there with his medrash, with his loom and his strings, and the problem was nobody had any idea what he was talking about, and his accent was so strong. Chalal no one knew what he was talking about, but it was just fascinating to watch him. I don't think I learned anything, but it was a very, very fascinating experience. So anyway, so this woman was working on her loom, and apparently part of the loom involved pedals for the feet. And in those days, very often women didn't wear underwear. So she would wear like a cloak or something, or a long robe. And all of a sudden, when she gets up, they found there was a little bit of dam on the mashtisa, on the loom itself. So the question was, is that considered to be a problem of a kesem? So she found that according, there were different opinions in the show what the word mashtisa meant, whether it means she found it on the wooden part of the loom, or she found it on the strings itself, on the threads itself. So we're going to assume that she found the mamash on the threads of the what she was weaving. So Sala came to Rabbi Yannai. So Shaila was brought to Rabbi Yannai to determine, is that considered to be a problem of a kesem or not? So Rabbi Yannai said, Amalot tezo v'tese. Let her go and do the pedaling, do the weaving part again. Why is that? Because it wasn't clear to Rabbi Yannai that where the kesem was found corresponded to where her legs actually were. If a woman finds a kesem in an area that is attributable to that part of the body, she finds it on her leg, she finds it right where she was sitting, so then we have to assume the blood came from there. If a woman's sitting over here, the blood is found 3 feet away, so she wasn't anywhere near there, so then you don't have to assume that the blood came from there. So when the shiloh was presented to Rabbi Yannai, so he said, you know, it's hard to see where she was sitting and pedaling, moving her legs around, is that positioned properly? Is that really positioned in an area where it makes sense that the dam came from there? So Rabbi Yannai said, let's run a test. Let's do it a second time around. So we'll look very, very sure. We'll go send her back to go do the weaving and have a woman go and watch very, very carefully to see, is it make sense that where the blood fell, the blood was found, came from that part of the body?
Let me have a source earlier where she was walking by and she beat up, and so it wasn't, it was a lot of doctor where her legs would be, and then he said that.
No, but there we found blood on her garment. So the question is, did the blood spritz from there?
Is it close enough
that we can assume it's a problem? So the Gemara says, Batani Shalom Bitaros. So the Gemara says, why? How could you run that test? We have a general rule that when you want to decide whether something is tummy or tohar, you don't run a second time trial. Because you don't know what happened. It's hard to replicate exactly what happened. So we generally don't do those kinds of things. So it says, Nakia Minim ain't shown the kula. It means we're not going to use this principle of kula of al chumra shonen. But the chumra we will pose a problem. Even though only some we generally make. You'll hear, if we run the test again and it looks to us like it's a problem, then we are going to pass in the chumra. Okay, so we're not dealing with the nuances right now of whether we should be shown or not be shown. We want to pick up upon why exactly was there a problem with some altogether on these strings of the loom is generally something that's not makabel tuma. Only garments are makabel tuma. When you have a whole article, a whole piece of clothing, that's a beged, and a beged is makabel tuma. If you just have strings of the chassis and the area, the wolf, whatever those strings are, threads, just threads in and of themselves that are not completed, are not makabel tuma. So Tosus picks up on that. So Tosus says, on the ninth of the Maram Kamos, so the end of the Tosfos, Adapt of Chesem and Aleph, V'yahim Ashtisa, to B'samach, Nihidu L'makabu Tuma, V'komach L'makabu Tuma, Tuma B'negoyim, comes to us and says, that even though strings, the threads, are generally not makabu Tuma, say if a dead body would touch them, they wouldn't become tummy. If a sheret or an avail or something like that would touch them, they wouldn't become tummy. But they are subject to the halacha of Tumas Negoyim. Tumas Negoyim means, the halacha of Negatzeras. Torah says that not only can a person become tummy, not only can a house become tummy, but clothing can become tummy as well. And the other Torah says explicitly, O b'shsi, O v'era. The Torah says black and white that the dinim of tumas teras, unlike all other tumas, apply even to non-finished garments, even just to the strings, just the threads that are just in the process of being woven, are also subject to the dinim of tumas teras. So since this mashtisa, this loom, these threads can become tummy to mistaras, therefore they can become ksum as well. So the Gemara just threw a curveball at us. The Gemara just told us that something can become subject to ksumim even if it's 99% of the time not makabel tuma. If it's makabel tuma for a certain type of tuma, even though it's the obscure tuma, very unlikely to have a shadow of tumas negrim at all. Doesn't matter if it's impossible to have a tumas negrim shadow. Not as they're not going to have the other tumor shadows either, but as long as it's makabel some kind of tumor, then it's subject to the halachas of ksum. So this makes matters even more complicated. We didn't understand in the first place where this whole tumor story comes from, and now we're picking and choosing. We're saying, well, even though it's not fully makabel tumor, if you have a little tumor, that's going to be a problem. It's this halacha that became the source of it's a trivia riddle about halachas ksum. When the Bachim learn this nidus, and when they finish ksum, I always like to ask them this question. I ask them, give me an example of the only time there's a difference. You can know the answer. Well, you may figure out the answer because we're learning it in the context. We ask the boys, give me an example of a difference in hilchos nida between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. There's a different psach, depending on, not because rabbis paskin differently, but there's a different halach in Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz Laretz. And within Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim has the status of Chutz Laretz. So you guys think I'm crazy. What it is, close to say, if a woman finds a kess, she's standing next to a wall, and the wall of the house, she's standing there, and all of a sudden she finds a kess on the wall, again, positioned in such a way that it could have very really, realistically come from her. Is it a problem or not? So generally, a wall of a house is not Mekabel Tumah. The house of Mechubel Karak is not Mekabel Tumah. But a house in Eretz Yisrael is Mekabel Tumah, because it can become Tumas Negoyim. So the post can say, if you find, I have never had a shadow, probably never had a shadow. So if you find a kesef on the wall of your house in Dinek, so then it's not a problem. I'm sorry, it is a problem.
No, it's not a problem.
I can't even pass my own machina. It's not a problem. But if you find it in Tel Aviv, then it is a problem. But if you find it in Yerushalayim, then once again it becomes no longer a problem because Yerushalayim is not makabel tumas negoyim because it's not veis eretz chuzascha. Chuzascha means where it was divided up properly. Each shave Yerushalayim was almost more and more of a communal property. So again, in case you're interested in answering the riddle of the chazid, that's where it comes from. But on a more serious note, well, where does this all come from? What in the world is going on? Why is Rebbe Nechemia's true? And why is Tumas Negoyim somehow throw a monkey wrench into it? And before we can understand the practical applications, like some found on toilet paper, and some found on pads, and some found on possibly synthetic material, some found in toilet bowls, and some found in many, many different applications of Misa. We can't understand it. We understand what Rebbe Nechemia is talking about in the first place.
Okay. At one point, we were talking about that there was, in terms of the svara,
you're right on target. You're already leading us right where we want to go. So it's going to take us a little while to get there, but you're definitely on the right track. So let's take a look at the 10th of the Rambam Kamas. It's a tshuva in the Nevi Yehuda. It's a very, very long tshuva. The good news is that the way the print is out on Bar-Ilan, only half the tshuva is the tshuva, and the other half is just, for some reason, is an identical replica of the tshuva. So it's two for the price of one. It's something was wrong with this tshuva. I don't know exactly what happened. It's not your fault. It's that the way it prints out of this tshuva. But the tshuva just repeats itself. Well, at least part of the tshuva. Part of the tshuva repeats itself. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter. So getting back to over here, beginning of the tshuva in Simeon days. So the shaila was, Levayer Taimi de Rebbe Nechemia de Omer Dovish and Mekabel Tumah and Mekabel Ksumah. So, pretty straightforward question was sent to Nevuda. Can somebody tell me what's going on in this thing? So, tshuva. So, Nevuda gives you a whole shekhar. You give like a whole week of shirim to get to the answer. We're going to try to streamline the tshuva. Says that Nevuda, Lefini is Daidi Nire. It all started with the famous kasha of the Kesef Mishnah. Mishum de Kesef Mishnah Tama. Lama Ksumim Tumayim. Why are any ksumim tummy? Ever, why a woman finds a kesem, why is there ever a problem? Everything we've been talking about for the last month, why is it ever a problem? Every kesem should automatically be okay because of a sfeik, because of a double doubt. What's the double doubt? Safek be'alma, maybe the blood came from somewhere else. We don't know. It was not Hagosha. So we don't know for certain where the blood came from. So it's possible maybe it came from somewhere else. Now again, she doesn't know, she didn't walk past the butcher store, she doesn't know that it came somewhere else, but I mean, they suffic or not, but still a 50-50 chance, maybe it did. So suffic be alma. Even if you want to argue that it didn't come from the butcher's store, it came from her. Shema minat stadim. Maybe it came from the sides, namely what we would call, maybe it's cervical, maybe it's in the vaginal area, maybe she has an irritation. Maybe it's not uterine blood, maybe it's not done to this altogether. So, although each one of those statements is only a suffix, well, you put one suffix together with another suffix, that we call a sfeik sfeika. I think Mark Subastav Test tells us that everything's mutter. When you have sfeik sfeikas, you have double vowels, everything is all right. So I love a reish break test, look at the Surabians. That was the Kesavish's formulation. Why does some ever pose a problem? What happened to sfeik sfeika? Well, the tshuvas of Acharonim, later the Acharonim in their tshuvas, shadu be narga. They threw an axe at this thing, and they said, no, this kasha is not a good kasha. Why is it not a good kasha? To suffix that stopped him, it was suffix. You can't use one of the sfeikas, one of the doubts, to say, well, maybe it came from a different part of our body. Because the first suffix was, maybe it's not from our body altogether. And the second suffix is, well, maybe it's from our body, but it's not from the uterus. So he says, no, that second suffix is not a good suffix. Shereishani, the Beferish Mishnah, Dam and Nimtza beprozdor, Chayav and Alava be as mikdash, Shechaskasim in Amokor. The Mishnah says that if a woman finds blood of prozdor, prozdor is a very tricky, what exactly that part of the body that means, but it means some part of the outside. Namely, she finds blood in that area outside, so she can't make a cheshvan. Well, it's only a suffix that is uterine. We assume any blood found in that area is chazaka, that it comes from in Amokor, it comes from the uterus, unless you're absolutely certain to the contrary. And the Mishnah says to such an extent that if a person would become tummit based on that chazok, that most probably, most certainly came from the uterus, we would even say that if a person entered into the base of Mikdash based on that tumah, you would have to bring a korban for that, b'shogeg. That's like a statement of ultimate certainty that we don't really say, it's not a chumrah. Any blood that's found in that area, daman tzibah prozor, is automatically considered to be daman amokor. So the Navida says you can't use that as a sfeik sfeik. A sfeik sfeik means there's a real chance, there's a realistic chance, maybe it's mutter for A, maybe it's mutter for B, you combine the two sfeikas together. If one of the sfeikas doesn't meet the criteria halachli of being a sfeik, we know to the contrary, so then it's not called a sfeik sfeik. That's what the Acharonim answered in the Kesef Mishnah's Kasha. So comes the Navida and rephrases the question. He says, okay, v'ani oimer, shegam b'shum sfeik zeluchud, shema me'almohaya v'taher. He says, forget about saying that it came from an infection. So that's not a legitimate suffix. So forget about that. Throw that out the window. But we should still be matter every kesem because maybe it came from somewhere else. But if that's only one suffix, no. Sherei ain't kind of satiric cloud. There's no derais involved. Sherei lower gisha. Because after all, there's no hargosha. So min haTorah, we have no problem. Elo, we're concerned with the Rabbanon. Well, the Issa, the Rabbanon, man, he's suffix, yeah, Hamakel. Since ksam is only a din derabanan, let's be makil all the ksam. Anytime you have any doubt, any mashu of a doubt, one doubt, all ksam should be mutter based on suffix derabanan lekula. Here, what the Navida just did with this question, the Kesef Mishnah formulated the question in a very lumdish way. Let's create a sfeik sfeika. Sfeik sfeika you don't have. So the Navida toned down the question and said, you don't need a sfeik sfeika. One suffix, one doubt should be enough, since we're only dealing with derabanans here anyway. So we could take all of some. We've been talking about some for the last 3 weeks.
Could have applied it to the first case. The three women.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So he's asking even one man. He's saying, forget about the three women. One woman finds a cast out. But I can't say for certain that it came from somewhere else. I can't say for certain it came from me. Something about Nakula. So he goes on, he says, now, what's faulty with this logic? There's obviously something wrong with this. There are two problems in the sentence that talk about Ksavim. So there's something faulty with this logic. The question is, what is it? The Nirlefini is Daiti. As my view, it appears to me, the answer to this question is as follows. Sha'av she min haTorah, ba'inan hagosha. Even though min haTorah, you require hagosha, sara, you have to have some kind of a sensation, whatever that means. Hainu l'tamiya isha, mishum nida, to mashiva, v'yos asura l'bayla kol shiva. That means to create two things. Number one, that the woman should be tameya for 7 days, can be truma, can be mishum, etc., and to be asura to her husband, which is, of course, the corollary to her becoming tameya. So when you're dealing with the gavra, when you're dealing with declaring that the person is tameya for 7 full days, like what we call a full-fledged nida, leaving out shimonikim, but to declare that the woman as a person is subject to the whole week of being tameya and being asura, so that, in fact, you need hagosha. For that's the exact cause that you need hagosha. Aval kol panim says, even though you require hagosha to make the woman tameya for the whole week, Didan the kaimel the makom mekomo tamei. That's a sugya that we'll get there a little later. But makom mekomo tamei means that any blood that comes from the uterus, even though it came out not derech hagasha, even for whatever reason, it didn't make the woman to a nida, but the blood itself is tamei. Let's not forget dam nidus itself is a davar tamei. If you have dam nidus that touches trumas, then the truma has to be burnt. If you have dam nidus that touches the garment becomes tamei. So dam nidus itself is a davar tamei. So im kein hadam shall kopanim tamei. The blood that came out is tamei dika blood. It doesn't affect the woman because in order to be mitamei the gavra, you require hagrasha. But in order to declare the dam is tamei, if it's dam in a mokum, it's dam from the uterus, that's said to be a davar tamei automatically. One of the ramifications of the blood being tamei. The blood that touches the woman, that exits the body, touches the woman, so the woman becomes Temeya. Now, my nafkamina of that tumah, it's like a person touches the sheretz, because the veil also become Tamei, but that doesn't impact on a whole week of being Tamei, and most importantly for us, it doesn't impact on our relationship with our husband. A person becomes Tamei because they touch Damnida, that doesn't make it into Tamei. Let's say a woman who's Tahora touches somebody else's Damnida, that doesn't mean anything. So when the, now you have a strange thing, a woman who's experiencing a re'iyas dam, shaloba hagosha, so if we come and ask a shayla, are you tamei or are you tahar? So the answer is, well, what do you mean by that question? Lagabi, what halacha? Am I tamei for 7 days with an issa labayla, with an issa kenisa lameh, the whole bakoi for a week? So the answer is, no, because there was no hagosha, I didn't have any sensation. Am I tamei because I touched a davar tamei? So the answer is yes. Nimtza, so when such a woman would come and ask a question, she would say, I had dam, shaloba hagosha, and I want to know, Rabbi, what am I? Nimtza shalkein ala tzricha matamiya isha tumas erev. We have to declare that the woman is tameya for 1 day. She was suffic echashal Torah, because based on what are we going to be matayah her? Shema mimena, because maybe it came from her. Now again, she found the blood, she's not even sure it came from her, but that would be a diaraisa. The kevachikva tam'ua tumas erev, once we declare that she is tameya for 1 day, so that psak of saying you are tamei for 1 day is tantamount to saying, well, we think it's from the mokar. So that causes trouble. Shuv muchrochim l'tamei osa b'shumnida v'derabanan. So now we have to say, well, once we declare the yotmeya for a day, then we have to declare the yotmeya for the whole week, midirabanan. As Eivud says, once we give that psak tamei, you can't walk away from a person and say, well, you're tamei for that area of halacha, you're tamei, but for the other area of your tahar, it's too confusing, too complicated. People are not going to process that information properly. And therefore, we're going to have to declare, sh'amru sh'apli agasha tamei. But now comes in and says, so that's the beginning of the background to where we're coming from. But he says, no, el delech ora, afil tumas erev, lohayolam l'tamei se'isha. So then the Rebbe says, wait a second, why did we have to declare that this woman is tamei, even for 1 day? Why was that necessary? Sure, yesh sveik sveika, there's a double doubt. Suffolk enu imenaklal, maybe it's not from her, we don't know for certain where it came from. V'yimtim slavim imena, and even if it's from her, shema nataf lehedi me'oisim akam l'chutz, maybe the blood didn't touch her when it came out. Maybe it just dripped right out. V'lundapam b'sar, didn't touch b'sar l'chutz, didn't touch externally in her body. U'maga be'sastar me'enim etamim. The fact that the blood is inside a body, touching that area inside, that doesn't count. That's not called touching something tamei. So comes in a view now and says, I had this great reason that we had to declare her to be tamei for 1 day. I'm not so sure we have to do that. Now we can come back almost to the Kesemishta Sveik Sveikas. We have a Sveik Sveika. Maybe the blood's from somewhere else. And even if it's from her, maybe it never touched her on the way out. The kevach ain't it tamei neither. So imken ain't to masarach b'shul maga. The yesh suffik shalom nagad down sar lachutz. We have a suffix, we have ayes fake sveika. And our penach she'ena lemuchrach ematami aisha. So says the Rebbe, you're right. We don't have to declare the woman to be tameya. Aval kofar mshuchan letami habeged shenimtzak kasem shumaga. What we have to do is declare that the garment is tamei. That it's touching the garment. I see this blood on the garment. So the garment is for sure going to have to be declared tamei. The nimtzak latnu. We had to decide lomer shehum yin aisha. Shereish mezeh suffix Torah. So it comes in Rebbein and says that what's ultimately the engine driving this whole halacha is we have to declare the garment is tamei. Once we declare the garment is tamei, then we have no choice because otherwise we're going to give her an absurd psak to say the garment is tamei, but you're okay. She won't be able to handle that. We have to declare that she's Tamei as well, Mother Rabbanan. We can skip down the next two lines. So at the end of that line, Zel Benimtze B'davar Mekabel Tumah. Aval B'davar She'enu Mekabel Tumah L'Shach Svar Hanal. So he says, the only reason why we had to declare the woman Tamei is because we had to declare the garment Tamei. Therefore, if we don't have to declare the garment Tamei, because the garment is not Mekabel Tumah, we'll hold free. Shalom Yisrael. Yeah, but we don't know that Dam was touching her. We know that Dam was touching the garment.
Yeah, but she was wearing the garment.
Because you're thinking in terms of like, the underwear is mamash on next to her body. She's wearing a robe, blood on the bottom, but blood never touched her. So at the end of the day, it's the tumah of the beged that's causing tzaras for the woman as well. So that's the background of Tzahof and Mitzvah. And next week, we'll try to finish up this debuta and then try to put some into play, some real applications with Maisa for this whole Yisrael, you know, for Rechevi, explain this.